Aloha friends, it's Robert Stelic. Welcome to the third season of the Blue Planet Show. I started the show a couple years ago in my home office in the garage during the pandemic, just to get to know other wing foilers, find out more what drives them, what inspires them. And as always, I like to find a little bit more about their background and just get to know them a little bit better and learn for my own benefit. And I'm stoked to be able to share it with all of you. I get people coming up to me all the time saying, I watch your shows all the way to the end. So I'm one of the 5% that watches the whole thing. So stoked to hear that. And I know many of you are also listening to it as a podcast while you're driving to the beach or going foiling and getting stoked, or just listening to it while you can't go in the water because it's too cold or you're traveling or whatnot. So always to hear that kind of stuff, super stoked. And today's guest is James Casey, who also has a great podcast. So if you haven't listened to that, it's all about downwind foiling. You should check it out. And he also has a coaching club that you can join to learn about downwind foiling. He's an amazing athlete. He holds the record for the most kilometers foiled in one day, and a great coach for any of you who want to get into downwind foiling. And he also invented the sport of winging upwind and then deflating and foiling downwind. It's really cool stuff that he's doing and pioneering, also designing and testing equipment and so on. Without further ado, here is James Casey. Okay, James Casey, welcome to the Blue Planet Show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I've watched a bunch of these shows, and yeah, it's cool to be on here myself now.
Yeah, and I've been listening to your shows while I'm driving, getting stoked and motivated to do more downwind foiling. So thanks for doing that. A lot of really good information on your show. And I want to get into that, like downwind foiling, your Casey crew or the coaching crew, and then also the Molokai race, and then your announcement about joining Cold Foils and all kinds of stuff, your record, 213 kilometer record on a foil, all that kind of stuff. But before we get into all of those things, let's talk a little bit about your background. Let's go into a little bit like where you were born, how you grew up, and how you got into water sports and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so yeah, James Casey. I was born in Sydney, Australia, and it's basically the East Coast. And my mum and dad both surfed as a kid. They took me out surfing and I get boogie boarding first and then surfing. And I think I remember vividly actually getting my first surfboard when I was like probably a bit of a late starter compared to people nowadays, but I was like 10 or 11. I got like this Pukus four fin super 90s board, skinny nose, like super pointy, heaps of rocker. But that was my first board. It was just one of my dad's old boards that he didn't use anymore. Yeah, this is your board now. You can take this here. This out. And yeah, pretty much surfed all through my teenage years. I competed in like board riders. So I won the juniors Mona Vale board riders season sort of competition. But then when I got 18, 19, I started getting more in my rugby union. So I was playing a lot of rugby, played for the local club, the Ringarats, and I played a couple games in first grade, but I was basically just too small to be following that dream as an athlete in rugby. I was also competing against basically who's now the Wallabies captain, Michael Hooper. So like people who watch rugby would know what I'm talking about. But yeah, I was playing rugby against him a lot. So rugby was always, I was always second field to him. But I just loved it. It was great camaraderie and that sort of stuff. But I was still juggling my rugby and surfing. And basically as a rugby player, you're pretty big and bulky. And so it's not the best for surfing. But I got into stand-up paddling in my sort of, I don't know the exact date, but I was pretty young. I was probably like 14 or 15. We were in Hawaii and I sprained my ankle kite surfing. And
how did you get into kite surfing?
Yeah, I was thinking that when I said that, I've got to explain that. So I got into kite surfing. I used to go to Maui a lot. Basically, my dad was a windsurfer. And basically every July, we'd go over to Hawaii as a family holiday to windsurf. And I was learning to windsurf, and then all of a sudden there were all these kiters around, and I'd nailed my like water starts. So on the small sort of wave riding board, I was just starting into wave riding, and then I cut my foot on the reef out at Uppers at Kanaha. Yeah. And so I was out of the water for a bit. And when I was out of the water, my younger brother and sister learned to kite surf. And then I was all fired up. I want to learn to kite surf. It looks easier. And you're on a smaller board. And so basically going backwards, I guess, windsurfing. My dad, because he windsurfed, he took us out in the lake a lot, just the local Narrabeen Lake, and we learned to windsurf on big. We used to call it the island, just a massive, it was a starboard, I think, a massive starboard, and you can get three people on it. It was super stable for us kids as well. So we did that. Then I learned on a smaller board, wave sailing. I never really nailed it. I'd one or two trips down to Jaroa, and then Hawaii was almost there, and then I cut my foot out of the water for a week, then learned to kite surf. And kite surfing was what we loved to do as a family. Like my brother, my dad, and myself would all go out kite surfing at home and in Maui, and it was sick. But yeah, then I sprained my ankle kite surfing this one time. I guess it must have not been July because there was some waves. It must have been winter. And there were heaps of good, it was good surf that year too. So I cut my foot. So I sprained my ankle kiting and I couldn't pop up on a surfboard like regular surfing because my ankle basically re-sprained my ankle. So we went to the local shop, what's it called, High Tech in Maui, and we rented Hawaii paddle surf, like stand-up paddleboard, because we'd seen Laird do it. We were in Hookkeeper and Laird was doing his helicopters, and we're like, that looks pretty cool. Yeah. Went down to High Tech. Do you guys sell these stand-up paddleboards? Yeah, we got a couple. So we rented two of those. And we're actually staying at like near Mama's Fish House. And there's a few reefs out there. And basically, when there's no wind, we managed to score some really good sessions out there on the stand-up paddleboard, just like glassy and like 4 to 6 foot kind of thing. And I was on the stand-up paddleboard on these outer reefs. And it was like, oh, this is pretty legit. And on the stand-up paddleboard, it was easier because you know, you're paddling out to these outer reefs and on the stand-up, you're comfortable. So I'm like, this is cool. So we went home and stand-up paddling wasn't really a thing yet. Went home and the local shop back home in Sydney, WSS Boards, Sam Parker didn't have any production boards, but he did have a custom one that a local builder had built him, just basically a big longboard. And so we grabbed that off him for the week and just was frothing out on that. My ankle is now better now. So it was just like, it was just because we liked it. And basically, when the stock came in, we bought one. But between that, I actually grabbed my dad's windsurf board. We'd never paddle, so we had a rake. And we cut the prongs off the rake, the plastic rakes. And we were paddling around the local spot on this windsurf board, like a smaller windsurf board. Had the full sandpaper deck, so we got smoked, rashed up on the stomach. But yeah, that was... And then basically, once the production stuff was out in Australia, we were riding it. But I was never really competing. So like I did all... This is all like in 14 or whatever, I was that sort of age. And so I was paddling around, but I didn't know there was competitions. And my brother worked in the local shop, WSS Boards. And I went to one competition at Long Reef and it was fun, but it wasn't really something I was motivated to pursue. We did a race actually. My first SUP race was Mona Vale to Collaroy, which is like 8Ks. And there's a nice little northeasterly breeze. I'd never paddled a race board before. My brother working at the shop had organized a board for himself, my dad, and me. And there was 2 14-footers and 1 12-6. And somehow I got stitched up and was put on the 12-6. So we're doing the race and it's all like a little downwind. We're just cruising because we don't know how to race. We're just paddling like we are surfing, looking for little bumps to catch. And all of a sudden this storm comes through and we're about halfway through the race. We're at the back because we're just cruising. And this hail, it starts hailing on us. So massive storm. The wind was northeast. Hailstorm comes through. The wind's now south. And so we're all lying on our boards, paddling into the wind, like prone style. And because I had a 12-6, I could keep it pointed into the wind easier. I wasn't getting blown around as much. So I remember vividly beating my brother. And he was all off it because it was because you had a shorter board. It was easier for you to paddle into the wind. Mate, a shorter board should go slower. So the competitive spirit was always there. But I didn't touch another race board for a very long time. So that was interesting. That was not the best start to the whole racing stuff. It wasn't until my now brother-in-law, Grant Hardiman, got into SUP racing that I really got into the SUP racing stuff. But in the meantime, I was SUP surfing heaps. So I still SUP surfed a lot. When the waves were small back home, I'd SUP surf heaps. Wasn't really competing, but just loved it. On the small days, you can just paddle out to the same as in Maui. We were paddling out to these outer reefs and surfing waves by ourselves rather than sitting in the pack of 20 or 30 on a shortboard waiting for that one that came through. That's a muddled history. Once I got into this, I actually got into the SUP surfing, went down to an event in Marimbula. It's called the Marimbula Classic. Quite a famous event here in Australia anyway. Yeah. Had like guys like Robbie Nash come over in the history of it all. And But I met two good friends now, JC Shimahara and Toby Cracknell, and Kai Bates as well, actually, and Sam Williams. And those sort of four people got me into the competitive side of SUP, because I didn't even know, like, the APP World Tour, or the whatever it was called before that. I didn't know it existed. I didn't know you could compete on a stand-up paddleboard. I didn't know there were races. I was just doing it for fun. I wasn't really in the scene. So I went over to Hawaii, did the Sunset event trials, got into the main event. And basically from there, Tristan was like, oh, you've qualified for the whole tour now, if you want to come to Brazil and France. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. So I rallied, and I just finished uni at this time. So I was like, okay, I got a bit of time. I haven't really locked myself into a job yet. So I just did that for 2-3 years, competing on the SUP surf and race circuit, doing Molokai to Oahu and a bunch of races did a few races in Europe, did a few surf events in Morocco and Hawaii and France, and went to the wave pool in Abu Dhabi. And yeah, it was a pretty cool time. And then pretty much I was doing that until COVID hit. And then now COVID's hit, we basically, it all stopped, all the racing on the SUP stuff. And yeah, so here's...
Wanted to share this video. This was when I first met you. This was like at the Molokai race, and you had it was you and
Marcus
Tardrew talking about the dugout. I was just curious about it and interviewed you. And so this was in 2016. Was it the first time you did the Molokai race?
This is the second time I did it. Yeah, this is the second time. Yeah, it was my third season competing, like racing over in Hawaii, but I didn't get in the first year to do Molokai to because I hadn't done enough races, basically.
And you were one of the first guys to use a dugout in the Molokai race, I think, too. And you did really well with it, right? So everybody started being curious about the dugout boards.
Yeah, so dugout boards were pretty common on 14-foot boards, but for the unlimited boards, not many people were using them. So yeah, it's probably good to talk about this. I was riding for JP, and basically JP had said, oh, we don't make unlimited boards. You can get one made from SIC. You can get one made wherever you want. And basically the year before, I used SIC, and Marcus had spoken to Matt Nottich and said, oh, I think I can make something faster than your SIC. What do you think? And he was like, yeah, Matt was keen. And then I got caught wind of, oh, if you're getting one, Matt, he was my like sparring partner. I was like, I want one too. So we both paid Marcus to design a board for us, and Deep sort of made the boards. And yeah, these are the first unlimited dugouts that we'd used. And basically, it certainly caused a bit of a stir in Hawaii when people saw them. You know, it was like the world's biggest bathtub when they filled up. But yeah, they were super quick. And this relationship with Marcus stems all the way through. Like I then signed with Sonova the following year. And then I won Molokai in 2019 on a board that Marcus and I actually built, like in his backyard.
That was the last time the race was held. So you're the defending champion, theoretically.
Yeah, look, 4 years, only have to race once. Yeah. So, yeah, cool. No, it was a little project that, for sure.
Yeah. So I just wanted to share that. That's a classic old video.
Awesome. Yeah. That's the main. Yeah. Marcus is now all clean cut too. He's got his hair and he's shaved, and he wouldn't recognize him.
Yeah. I just saw him in the background. So are you staying at his place right now, or?
Yeah. So I'm over here in WA. It's just because we're working together now on Code Foils. So it's been started there that year Deep. That's and then Sonova, and now with Code Foils. And so it's pretty cool. But yeah, Mark's my good mates. And yeah, I'm over here in WA. I was just doing a foil camp up in Exmouth. And so I've flown back
down. Let's get back to your history, though. Okay, so then you started doing the kind of the racing and also competing as a sub-surfer competition.
Yeah, yeah. My best result in the sub-surfing stuff was a second place at Sunset. I lost to Kai Vaz, but it was basically it was a good year for me. Like the surf was good, my board was good, and that was, second place. And that was, I was pretty stoked. And that year I won the overall race and surf sup champion. It wasn't an official world champion sort of thing, but it was like, I think they're trying to award overall athletes, not just the sup athletes, not just the race sup race athletes, but the overall. So I think that was must have been like 2016 kind of time where I won that sort of thing. And that's probably the biggest sort of world champion sort of thing I've done in that. But I did all that until COVID hit, really. I was doing all the sup sup surf events and a lot of the sup race events. And then foiling came out and it called the momentum of the sup stuff, because foiling, the reason I got into sup racing was because I'm a surfer first. So I still surf shortboards, longboards, foils now, obviously, in stand-ups, but surfing was where it all started. And when I got into sup, competing in stand-up was all about sup surfing and downwind racing, because to me, downwind racing was like longboarding out to sea and you're just trimming the whole time. So it's kind of like the longboard sort of stuff. And then when the foils came out and I started downwinding them pretty early, I was like, this is like shortboarding out to sea. I'm not longboarding anymore. I'm like, we are surfing now. And so that to me was like a real light bulb moment. And a lot of people are like, oh, you don't sup race anymore. And I'm like, oh, I still do the local events. Like I was at the Aussie Champs last year and still do a bunch of the local events. But yeah, the foilings and the downwind foiling especially is mind-blowing. Honestly, it's pretty crazy. And I guess my foil history started, I actually met Alex Aguera when I was over in Maui for an APP race event. And I was introducing through the Spencers. So Jeffrey and Finn were testing a bunch of the GoFoil stuff. And they, oh, Jimmy, you got to meet Alex. You're going to love this foiling stuff. And so I was actually staying with Vinny Martinez and Jake Jensen. And we were all in the house together because we were doing a race. And because I was introduced to Alex, basically, but Vinny and I were both swapping boards. And so we only had one foil set up because Alex lent us a board and a foil, like one of the original Kais, and we were out at Kanaha Lowers trying out, then a bunch of other spots between there and Hookeeper. And just if one of us was on the fall, the other one would be on like a bigger surf sup, just filming each other with a GoPro. And we were just trying to get the shot of us flying above the water. And that was this. And as soon as we left there, we're like, man, I said to Alex, I got to buy one. Like, when can I buy one? And he's like, okay, that must have been like a September sort of time of year, it's 2016. And then maybe it was 2017, but around that time. And I ordered probably the first GoFoil to ever arrive in Australia. It arrived in like November, just before the event, the ISA event in Fiji. And I remember going over there. I was over there to race the distance race on the stand-up, but I brought this foil with me. And on the, you know, we're all surfing Cloudbreak and whatnot in between the events. And I was towing behind the boat on the drive out on my GoFoil set up, and people were losing their shit. Like, oh, everyone's having a go. And that was the start of the foil brand and the downwind stuff. And yeah, it's been a whirlwind 4 years since then, or I guess 5 years, 6 years since then. But yeah, then
I heard like the first time you tried to do a foil downwinder was it with the Kai foil?
Yeah, so it would have been just after I got from Fiji. I went over to Western Australia and there's a race called King of the Cut. And all those, it's a really good downwind run because you get these sea breeze and it's like super consistent. And basically one day we went out with my square JP board and the go foil, and the board must have been like 7.2 by 26, but a square, not like the boards nowadays, have those kind of pointy tails and stuff, pointy noses, not long and skinny. And we went out the Mandurah run and we paddled. A friend of mine, Matt Nottich, and I, we were swapping boards. So one of us was on the foil setup, one of us was on a race board stuff. And basically we did the run, I think is about 10 kilometers, 10 or 11 Ks. We did half the run and we swapped out. And I got up twice, which looking back, I'm actually pretty stoked, could get up. I got up twice for about a total of like maybe 50, 60 meters up on foil. And I was like, man, this is hard. Because we'd seen Kai Lenny do it on his longer board. Go, he must just need a longer board, longer, skinnier board at that time. And because Kai was on a sawn off race board, a 12 foot kind of thing. It's funny how in the foiling world, everything just comes back, right? So like, and then, because now we're going back to that, but this was must have been 2016 or 17. Anyway, doesn't really, then I said to Alex, I think I need a bigger foil. So he sent me over the original Maliko, the blue one, that isn't curved down. It's like a flatter one. It was actually ahead of its time because it was higher aspect than the Malikos were. And like when I got that one, I got home and I did a downwind run I started downwinding once I got that foil. And once I had that bigger foil, I was getting up pretty much straight away because of my sort of sup racing and downwind knowledge. I could read the bumps well enough and was powerful enough to get up and foil. And once up, I think I was just chasing bumps and it was sick. But I had that one definitely humbling moment where we got 5 Ks and 50 meters of foiling. So yeah.
But even for you, it wasn't easy to get started, but yeah.
No way.
But the right equipment makes a big difference for sure.
Yeah, even just the slightly bigger foil was the difference for me. I think I was still on the same board more or less. I can't remember my first successful downwind run, actually, because I definitely had gone to Maui again. And I did a downwind run with Finn and Jeffrey on a prone board. We went from Kuau to Sugar Cove and we were paddling into waves and then falling around. And then Alex had this 10-foot, it was like a square board. It was a, like just a, he called it the aircraft carrier. It was super long and he just put a little bit more rocker in it, super light. And I paddled that thing up easy. And once I was up, I was like, I was good to go thing because the downwind knowledge I had from racing stand-up just translated straight across. But I remember that first run on that big board and it was like, oh, this is pretty cool. This is pretty epic. Boiling downwind is, as I said before, shortboarding and like surfing down the coast rather than trimming on the longer limited or 14-foot subs.
Wait, did you say you were prone foiling on a 10-foot board? Is that what it
nah,
was?
No, so I was stand up paddling on that one. Okay. Yeah, that was the aircraft carrier. It was like 9 or 10 foot long, but it was like square. Literally, it was like this shape.
Yeah, the early Kalama boards are like that too, right? That's at the time everyone thought that's how you get it as short as possible by just cutting off the nose and tail and make it square.
Yeah, it was interesting. That one Alex made actually, and it was. Like looking back at it, if he just refined that shape, it was long and it wasn't super skinny. It was probably like 25 or 26 wide, but it was like 8 foot and just, it was square for stability while going narrow for speed and long for speed. But looking back, like there's a lot of things that led us to the latest design that Dave has famously invented, the Barracuda style boards.
Yeah. And then you're still a team rider for Sonova, right? So when did that relationship start with Sonova?
So just that video you shared before was the year after. So it was just as when I got my Go Foil, I started on JP boards. So that was November. And then the following year, January, February, I signed with Sonova. And the first thing I did was like, okay, we need to make foil boards because foiling is where it's going to be. And so I went over to Thailand and we tested a bunch of stuff and we drew up with Bert Berger. He was over there and Marcus was back here. So we didn't, but Bert and I drew up our first sort of foil board range and it was long. They weren't thick enough. So my first SUP foil board that I did with them was 7'2" by 24.5", which like is a pretty good dimensions looking back, like how it's aged, but it was super thin. So it was only like 80 liters or something. And for me, it was fine. But I remember starting on that, and then Marcus took over designing the foil boards because he had started foiling too, and it made sense because he understood it. And so we basically, rails on Bert's board were like super pointy like this, and then Marcus just made them thicker and added the chine in, and that extra volume allowed us to go shorter and a bit narrower, and a bit narrower too with the same sort of volume. But I guess the Sonova relationship is epic. We're still designing a bunch of boards. We've got a bunch of prototypes coming, and there's because I aided them to build these foil boards, I said, oh, and then when I created the Casey brand, they're like, okay, we'll put the Casey logo on it. And it's your job to curate the design with Marcus and make sure you write the design specs, the website outline, explain to people what it is. So that relationship with Sonova has been really good. And obviously like racing, they were helping me fly around the world and travel and the SUP surfing stuff. And it's been a very healthy relationship with the boys in Thailand, the Sonova team.
Yeah, and then regarding the foil, so I guess you were riding for Go Foil, and then at some point you tried a whole bunch of different foils, and you ended up riding for Axis. So how did that all happen, and what was
story so I was riding for Go Foil for 5 years. So Go Foil for 5 years, and basically started with the Kai, and then the Maliko came out, and then the Eva and the Maliko 200 and all that sort of stuff came out, and then the GLs came out, which was like mind blowing because they were these higher aspect things, and the P180, and basically I've all the way up to the RS and the GT wings, I was a part of the team. And it was just, I was just craving a bit more input in the design process because GoFoil guys are just like fully Maui based, and they've got a pretty good test team in Maui. They got Dave and they got Jeremy Riggs and they got Alex himself is great at testing too. So they didn't really need me unless I was there. And when I was there, I was heavily involved in testing stuff and remember vividly testing, shimming the tail wing. We're out off Kahului Harbour in Alex's boat. And Connor and I were both testing some downwind wings for the Olokai race was coming up. And so we're testing like how to shim. Like, basically, we're tuning our foils to get them as fast as we could for the race. And unfortunately, that year, the wind was blowing like straight on shore. So it was just a course race. But the race we did was they dropped us out outside, basically between uppers and lowers at Kanaha. And we raced all the way back into shore. And
I remember that. Was that where there was a huge surf too coming in? Or was that
huge surf. Yeah. And a few guys, I think I got up last. But I think Austin Klammer fell off in the surf. This got maxed out. You got a bomb coming through. And that was a pretty cool race. That was just like full, like figuring it out. Yeah, and it was a bit murky water coming through. I hit something coming in through the end, but it was sick. It was a cool race. But yeah, so I'd worked a lot with Alex, and Alex was literally, I've got a house over in Maui, and my family has a house over in Maui. And we actually share a boundary with Alex. We're not direct next door neighbors, but like over the back fence, like Alex is our neighbor. So it's
cool.
It was a pretty cool relationship. When I was in Maui, like last time I was in Maui, Alex would literally pick me up and we'd go, okay, we're going to go test this thing, James. Come on, let's go. And yeah, it was super cool to be doing that. But the problem was when I wasn't in Maui, I couldn't test anything. And I was only really in Maui maybe once or twice a year, and only really for maybe a total of 3 weeks. So I was craving more input in the design and pushing the envelope to race the wings. But also, I guess with my coaching stuff, I wanted to be able to have input to help people learn too. So yeah, about 18 months ago, I announced I was leaving GoFoil and tried a bunch of different foils. I was trying Lift stuff. I was trying Unifoil stuff, Axis, Armstrong. What else did I try? I felt like maybe some Cloud9 stuff too. And basically, and I spoke to them all, and basically the Axis guys were really keen to work on a range of foils with me. And basically in the last 18 months with Axis, I reckon I prototyped about probably 50 sets of gear.
Wow.
It was kind of like, be careful what you wish for. Because then my job was like, one of the things, I sent out 6 different tail wings. They didn't tell me what they did, but they said, go out and try them and tell me what you feel. And basically little examples like that. And so we tried a bunch of different stuff, and it was an awesome relationship with Evan and Adrian. And I was on the phone to Adrian after every session. And that was exactly what I craved. Like with GoFoil, I did the same thing, but I only spoke to Alex every now and then because I only got prototypes every once or twice a year. Whereas with Axis, I was getting like every month they were sending out a box of gear and saying, test this stuff for us, test that for us. And it was epic. Oh. If fast forward to now, I guess I've just announced that I'm working with basically a few mates of mine, Marcus, Ben and Dan, and basically creating our own brand, which is super exciting, working with Codefalls. And look, if this hadn't come up, I'd definitely still be working with Axis, because there's no bad blood with Axis. Like we're still mates. Adrian's actually coming. I'm just going to miss him in Perth, but he's coming over, and I've left a bunch of gear for him because I've given some of the gear back. And yeah, if they want me to come over, Adrian wants to come over to New Zealand and do a downwind foil clinic. And yeah, that were cool, especially like going, you know, when I told them about joining Code about a month ago. They were obviously a bit upset, but they're super cool. And they're like, they were stoked for me that I was creating my own thing. So they weren't angry at me. And the beauty is we're still mates, I guess. So it's cool. But as I said, like the relationship with Codefoils is really good.
So talk a little bit about that. So Codefoils, like who's behind it and what's the business plan and so on?
Yeah. So basically Marcus and Bennett, basically they're brothers, they're the Tadri brothers. They've been designing their own, or basically in the Sonova range, Marcus has been doing all the foil and SUP boards for a while. And Ben Tadri has been doing the same for one. And basically for them to be working together is pretty cool, because they've got some seriously good design brains. And yeah, they asked me, did I want to be a part of this company they're building? And yeah, I was like, yeah, let's do it. Because I've worked with Marcus for, I guess, 5 or 6 years now. And I've known Ben for a bit longer. And basically the plan is to just create foils for sorry, the dog's just done a fart. The plan is, stinks, stubby. The plan is to create foils that we want to use, you know, and that I can teach with too. Because my coaching business is a super important thing too. So at the moment, we've had two prototypes. Basically, we've got a sort of surf wing, and I think it's around 850 square centimeters, and we've just had a prototype race wing that literally I've only tried it twice, 2 or 3 times now, and it's been really positive. Like the whole philosophy, I guess, behind it is we want our stuff to be stiff and solid and mast, and the connection to the base plate, to the mast, it's all one, but like the connection point is overbuilt. but it feels so nice and stiff. And then likewise, the mask to the fuse is thick. And so that's, I'm seeing if I have one. Actually, I've got a mask just here, I can show that.
Yeah, why don't you show us? Is it all one, you said the fuselage and front wing and tail wing are all one piece?
No, so I don't think I've got a tail wing or, no, there's none around here. Marcus must have took it, but okay. Yeah.
Yeah, show the mask. So yeah,
you can see like that. So yeah, that's pretty chunky down the bottom here. Right. We just find it adds extra stiffness, and even the base plate's pretty chunky too. Uh-huh. And then the connection to this is a thicker. It's just like probably 30% thicker than most other brands. This just allows more fuse to get on, so that makes the fuse a bit chunkier. What we found straight away was that it was just super stiff, even though like our first prototype, but everything was just so well connected. So yeah, the base plate. I think that's what I was talking about. And then the fuse connection was just super solid. Mm. And that to us was a really important thing. Coming out with a brand now, and like after seeing a bunch of brands work on certain things and then realizing their mask is isn't stiff enough, and having the connections to the front fall or the rear fall a bit. It basically, you don't want any flex. So having that, able to see what other fall brands have done, we've learned from that and basically created a pretty, I'm loving, especially in the surf, the 850, it's super well connected, and a lot of people.
So, is the fuselage like aluminum, like the access foils, or is it more like the lift foils, where it's like a front piece together
it's,
with?
More like the lift and unifoil sort of stuff. How it's just like the front one goes on, and then the fuse bolts on. Like a lot of people are comparing it to the Cabrina, how it's on the angle. So So it's a super snug connection. There was one just on the couch there, but Marcus just took off with it.
No worries.
Showing the shop. Yeah, we're super excited.
So are you actually a partner in the business or a team rider and R&D, or like how does that work?
Yeah, more of a partner, not just team rider, which is why it's like an exciting sort of project. So we're building a brand up from nothing. So So Marcus is a designer of Sonova. Ben was a designer of One. That is the designer of One. And then Dan, he actually lives three doors down, and he's an architect builder, but he's really good at basically drawing everything up and making it all. So the designs, he puts it into software that makes it can blend everything. So it's super clean and slick looking connections. And he's been working the hardest of late, trying to get all the files ready to build. It's been a busy month, that's for sure.
Yeah. And that's why you're in Perth right now?
I was actually over here to do a foil camp up in Exmouth, and I extended 2 days before and 2 days after, just so I could catch up with the team and talk about a lot of things and get some footage and just work on all things code, as well as do a bit of work up the coast too. It was good timing. It wasn't planned. It was just good timing.
Cool. Yeah. Like when we look at Australia on a globe or something, it looks kind of like a small little island, but to fly from Sydney to Perth is like a 6-hour flight or something, like three time zones three or four time zones?
Yes, it's a 4.5-5 hour flight depending on the winds, and it's 3 hours difference. Yeah, so back home, when I chat to my wife, she's at home now. It's 9 o'clock here, and it's midday in Sydney. So it's a big country. It's a big country, that's for sure. Yeah, I haven't been over, and during COVID, we actually couldn't fly to Perth because everything was locked down. So it was almost like a new country over here in Western Australia for a while. Yeah, everything went.
Yeah, starting a new foil company with like Axis, they have so many different foils and design, like shapes, like so many different wings you can choose from and stuff like that. So starting a new company, I guess one of the hard things is the tooling costs are pretty expensive. Every time you make a new wing, you have to make a mold for it and all that. Yeah, and then if it doesn't work, you have to like toss that mold and make another one or whatever.
Yeah exactly. Yep, not easy. Well. Yeah, no, it's not easy at all. Yeah, the plan for the Rangers at the moment is we've got our surf wing, or all-round surf wing and downwind wing, which is the 850. So I've been surfing and downwinding it. It's been unreal. In terms of size, it's like I feel like the area is not that good a guide, because we all know the 120 probably surfs a bit bigger than what, or downwind's a bit bigger than what the area is. This 850 feels somewhere between the 120 and the 170, probably like a 130 or 140 sort of size. If you were to compare in the lift range, in the access range, it feels like an 899. So that's the kind of size that the one we have now. And we've got plans to build one bigger and one smaller. At the very least, and probably going to go at least two bigger. So probably have 5 or 6 foils within that range. And then we're doing a race range, which we're busily working on now to get ready for Molokai because it may only be March, but it takes time to build molds and test stuff. And so we've got our first one here, and it's great, but there's things we can improve upon it. So we're back to the drawing board and try to make it better. And then we're going to do like a more of a lower aspect sort of style foil for basically bay runs, small, slow surf, and just a foil that goes slower. So you can, so especially for me when I'm teaching, I want a foil that I can teach with that isn't going so fast that it's like scaring people. And it doesn't have to be a really big foil to go slow. You can make a foil that is still like compact but goes slow. So we're kind of the three ranges that we're working on, but really we're just focusing on getting everything released and the launch date, I guess, for shops to have these code foils in shops for the 850. I guess, and that's first surf ranges, or the all-round range is the 1st of June. So that's what we're working towards, which doesn't seem that far away for us, but for everyone else, we're like, oh, June, that's like March, April, May, June, it's like 3 months. But I think, Robert, you probably know it takes more than just the stuff is good. Now we're just getting stuff, ordering like
Yeah,
assets to get to
manufacturing and
shops.
logistics and stuff. Yeah, just 3 months is not a
Exactly.
long time.
Not at all. So
3 to 4 months, yeah.
we're pushing hard, but and obviously we're hoping to have to release the bigger and smaller wings in that range, but it probably won't be till after June. So the first one will be the 850, that's sort of slightly bigger than the Lift 120 sort of size, nine axis sort of size, and then the rest will come after that. But yeah, baby steps, because it all not only does it cost a bit, but it takes a lot of time too. So
Yeah.
it's been a bit of a journey already. I'm only officially 1 week in.
Cool. And then what about boards? Are you going to continue with Sonova making like the KC labeled boards, or are you going to make code foil boards also? Or.
No, at this stage, we're gonna like Ben still works for One Ocean Sports, and Marcus and I still work for Sonova, so it makes sense for us to stick with them for the time being, because we've got great relationships with Ben's got a great relationship with Jacko at One, Marcus and I have a great relationship with Tino and Dylan at Sonova. We don't want to break that relationship, and we've
Sure.
got good products, and we're super happy with how it's all working
And
as is.
the foils, are they made at the Sonova factory? Where are they made?
The foils are made in China. Yeah, so
China.
we've different factory. The Sonova don't really do carbon fiber, I guess. They're more of the balsa and paulownia skins, which for a foil doesn't really work.
Yeah, it's a very specialized manufacturing process, and
Yeah.
definitely not simple. You have to have, yeah, get everything right, especially like to make the mast stiff and torsional and all that kind of
Yeah.
different kind of things to consider. But anyway, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's super exciting. It's been a
And let's talk about the Molokai race. Since 2019, we haven't had it. And then this year it's going to be on July 30th, I think. And I got to see the list of people signed up for the foil race, and it's a pretty impressive list. A lot of people are entered, yeah, including you and Kai Lanny and a bunch of other really top riders are doing the foil race. So I almost feel like that's going to be like the main event, almost like the downwind foiling.
Yeah.
But yeah, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Obviously, 2019, I won it on a stand up. And basically, that was my goal. That was when I first started SUP racing. My goal was to win Molokai to Oahu. And I was stoked to be able to do that. And I dedicated it to my dad, who's now passed away. And that was a really emotional experience to be doing that. But I feel like, to me, like a lot of people are like, oh, you got to do it again, go back to back on the SUP. And to me, I feel like it's almost not that chapter is done, but it's like, I've achieved what I wanted to achieve on the stand up. Not only that, since I started racing Molokai on a SUP, like the first year I did it, there were 15 to 20 big names, and probably of those, probably five people could have won it. The previous year, the year I won, there were probably five or six people that were like really racing it, like super competitively to win. And of that sort of five or six, there was probably only two or three or four that were real serious contenders. So what I've seen is the SUP. Downwind SUP racing has declined a bit, or a
Yeah,
lot. Like
for sure.
all the guys that were downwind stand-up paddling are now foiling, just prone. They're downwind foiling now. So to me, the sport that I was interested in has shifted to foiling. So
Right.
for me, the foil stuff, it was, even in 2019, I was foiling like a lot. And for Molokai, I gave myself a bit of a foil ban. And Marcus was foiling and training for the foiling. And he was like, come on, Jimmy, come on the foil. I'm like, nah, man, I just gotta tick this off. I gotta win this race on the stand up. And I wanna get that done. And yeah, I'm stoked I did that, because then it wasn't on for 2020, 2021, 2022, and it's just coming back in 2023. I could have been still wanting to win it on a stand up. And
I mean, for a while they were talking about maybe doing the foil event on a Saturday and then the paddle and prone event on a Sunday. If they would do that, would you try to do both, or would you just focus only on foiling?
Oh, yeah, I'd focus on foiling, but like the fact is on the day before, I'd do both because I'm over there. I still have all my gear over there. It's all ready to go. The only thing is the extra cost. A Molokai Tauaha race is not a cheap event, and an escort boat is super expensive.
And hard to find. That's one of the biggest challenges, exactly. I think, like this year, especially because during the pandemic, a lot of the escort boats got out of the business, or they sold their boats, or got into fishing or doing other things. And then, yeah, so it's actually going to be really hard to find escort boats for all the competitors, I think.
Big time. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, that I'm lucky enough. I've got the same boat captain, and Andrew, he actually hit me up because I got a few people asking, are you doing Molokai? Because people are hitting me up to do their escorting, and you won it last year, so last time we did it, so you're my first guy. And he's like, and he goes, and I hope you're foiling, because obviously for a boat, it's quicker on a foil.
You need a fast boat too, right?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah.
Yeah, so, I signed up to do it on a wing foil this year, so I'm excited to be wing foiling.
It's so cool they did a wing event too. I assume the wings should win, like the wings should be the quickest. Really, but it'd be interesting to see how they go in the final bit. That upwind leg could be pretty, there'd be a bit of tacking going on. And if there's no
going
waves.
Into the finish is going to be tricky, but for you guys too, going into the wind with a
it's the same,
and a foil board is going to be super tricky.
Yeah,
but last year we had that blue water race where Jack Ho came in like third overall. I think the first two finishers were wing foilers, and then he came in third, so you beat a lot of wing foilers on the stand-up foil board.
Yeah.
Pretty fast, because you can go straight downwind versus on a wing, you have to angle more a little bit.
Angle off, it's a big question. Can you go quick enough over further distance to beat the SUP guys who are going more direct, I guess? But
I think you said you did the King of the Cut with where there was wingers and stand-up foilers, a King of the Cut race or something?
Yeah, I haven't done it when there's wingers because it wasn't on last year. And the year before, in 2019, winging wasn't a thing, people weren't racing. So the last time I did King of the Cut was 2019. And then COVID hit, so we couldn't get over here. And then when everything opened up last year, end of 2022, the King of the Cut wasn't on anymore. Basically, all the volunteers, they couldn't get enough volunteers together.
But have you competed in any downwind races that have both wingers and stand-up foilers?
I don't think I have, actually. I don't think I have. Yeah, I haven't competed against or raced against
wingers. It'll be interesting to see who's faster. I think like with the wing, you do have an unfair advantage and you can probably use a smaller, faster foil. I think there's a lot of variables that go into
it. I've chatted to Marcus about this, and he did the race when the King of the Cut, when there were wingers and foilers, and the wingers smoked them. Not only because they were, from the start, they were up and going, but smaller foils, they're using small foils, they're using big wings, like big sails, and they're moving. Wingers were quicker, even though they were having to go a little bit further distance. They were faster by a fair bit, actually, 5-10 minutes, I think it was.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah,
cool. So I think that's going to be super exciting. We're going to try to interview some more people that are in that race, and
yeah, it should be fun
to be part of it the first time they're doing wing foiling too. So have you done much wing foiling, or just more focused on downwinding and surf foiling?
Yeah, more focused on downwinding and surf foiling, but I've done the stuff winging that I do is mainly around wave riding. So I'm, and not even airs. So I do a few airs, but I'm not a trickster. Like I'm not as interested in the big jumps and the flips as I am like the carves and the re-entries and the cutbacks and that sort of stuff. So to me, winging is like poor man's towing. It's like toe foiling, because you can tow yourself into the wave and then you just drop it in the back end and you're just surfing like you would anyway. So it's,
and then a little bit about, I know you've done like upwind on the wing and then deflate and then just go downwind with the wing under your arm or something like that, or put it on your back.
Talk a little bit about that. It's such an epic tool for that. So in Sydney especially, we get a lot of days where the wind is winter. We get offshore breezes, so it's like howling like 30 knots offshore, and we can go into sort of harbors or bays or river entrances, and we can, like, big river entrances, and we can, what we do is we wing upwind, like 5Ks upwind, which is like almost 10Ks because you have to zig and zag upwind tacking. And then what a lot of guys are doing is they're going onto the shore, deflating their wing on a beach, rolling it up, putting in a backpack, and then paddling up. And I was like, why are we doing this? Why don't we just deflate it on the water? So I started deflating on the water, wrapping up, throwing the backpack. It was a bit wet, a bit soggy, but it was still doable. And then I was like, why am I sitting down and doing it? Why don't I just deflate it whilst on foil? So I deflate it whilst on foil and then hold it under your arm until you stop. And then you got your paddle on your back and you can pull that out once you're ready. But yeah, and then I was chatting to a mate, and like, because this run we do, it's in a river, and basically there's a national park, so you can't drive. It's hard. It's like a bit of a 2 or 3K hike to get to the beach that you'd start at. Going there, we actually just start at the finish point and we wing upwind, and then we do our pack down, however you want to do it. And then we'd go like most of the way back to the finish. But you can go, there's two options. You can either pull in to this little bay where the car is, or you can go around this headland, and there's like, it's just a peninsula, so it's a sand spit, and you can go around the other side. So you get like an extra 3 or 4 kilometers. So I guess 2-3 miles of downwinding, and it's like a kilometer upwind back to the beach. And so what I was doing was I was doing my deflate, like wing upwind, deflate at the top of the run, and then I'd wing all the way down to the bottom of the run, and I rigged up this SodaStream bottle so I could press a button and it reinflated the wing whilst I was up on foil. So now, instead of sitting down and pump, I was actually pumping up the wing prior to this. I was pumping That's up really the wing cool. in the water. Yeah. And I'd do it that way. But yeah, the SodaStream bottle was pretty sick.
It takes a little bit. You also don't have to carry that big pump around, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah,
but I heard someone say that the carbon dioxide is like not good for your bladder or something like that. That they used to do that with kites and it wasn't good for the bladder or something like that. Have you had any problems like with your bladders or anything like that? From that?
I've only done it like 3 or 4 times. I use a SodaStream bottle and I just rig that up. So it's just a big CO2 canister. And yeah, I'm sure it's not great for it, but it was still pump up on the water a lot of the time, because to set up the SodaStream bottle is a pretty specific thing, whereas I can just grab my pump and a dry bag and I'm good to go. The SodaStream, you got to attach it onto the boom and have the hose. And it was just it was an idea that mate of mine, Grant Perry, and I worked on for a little while. And
yeah,
he's on an E4, so he filmed it all. It was a pretty cool little clip.
Yeah.
And it still has a lot of function. But yeah, biggest thing that we noticed was when you did the CO2, the wing itself got really cold. So the CO2 was a really super cold air. And it like sort of stood the outside of the canopy or the inflatable edge of the strut.
Yeah, the leading edge was like freezing around the valve, probably, especially. Yeah,
exactly. So I'm not sure how good it is for the long term. I haven't tested it enough times to know, but I've done it 3 or 4 times and it was fine. Probably 4 or 5 times. It didn't blow anything up. We tested it on land first because we were worried about that. What's going to happen here? But yeah, it was sweet. It was sweet.
Nice.
I feel like there's a bit of a potentially a cool market in that. Like if you can, because winging downwind is epic, but it takes a bit of wing management. So like, I find it easier to downwind with a paddle than I do with a wing, because once I have the wing and I'm like letting go of it and it's just flagged out, it's behind me or in front of me. If I change directions, there's a bit of technique to either swap hands, or you've got to bring it behind you and drop it down behind you and there's a bit of admin to keep the wing out of the way and not to be able to go the same lines. Because what I find is when I'm winging, I'm going to cut across the wind a lot more than I would when I downwind, even if I've just got it flagged out. To go straight downwind, the wing wants to blindfold you, essentially. So that's where it came from, the whole deflate thing. I love the downwind thing, but winging upwind was the free shuttle. But the downwind part, I was like, man, this wing just doesn't get out of the way. And back home, I'm using a 4 or 5 meter wing most of the time when I'm downwinding. It'd be easier with a 2 or a 3, obviously, but it's even easier if you just deflate it.
Yeah, what I've been doing if you're racing downwind, what you can do is just put the wing up over your head and have it almost level, so that if you're going faster than the wind, straight downwind, it's just been neutral over your head. So that works pretty well too. But it's not really surfing.
Your arms get tired, Your arms get tired, right?
Yeah, not so much, because you can't really stay in that position. You can do that when you're on a good bump and you go really fast straight downwind. But then once you come off the bump, then you catch the wind again. So you bring the wing back down and stuff like that. Yeah, but yeah,
that makes a lot of sense for speed going downwind, because you're like,
I was thinking too, like the electric pumps are getting pretty good, like battery powered electric pumps. I wonder if you could set up something like that, but then they probably can't get wet. So be hard to make that waterproof. So
yeah, I've had so many people hit me up and say, oh, you should try this electric pump. And I'm like, yeah, but electric, I'm in the water. Like, it's going to get wet. If I fall off, all of a sudden, that's $30-$40 down the drain. And electricity and water is something I don't really want to be too close to.
Yeah, lithium battery and stuff,
I think even better options, you just get a decent pump. Like, electric pumps are great, but, like, you get good pumps that, like, hand pumps instead of the ones we stand on. You get hand pumps, and you can just pump it up. It doesn't take that long. And a lot of the time, I'll just deflate the leading edge and leave the middle strut inflated. So it's just pumping up the leading edge. So it's not the end of the world. Water in a pump is a lot less, it's less worse. It's less bad than water in a pump.
And you can make them pretty small too, the hand pumps.
Yeah, a mate of mine actually bought the shape, like a little. So
it's a little, because you definitely don't want something that you have to push against your board or something like that, because it's like everything's moving around. It's more almost like you want two handles that you can push together or something like that.
Yeah, accordion style pump, that'd be pretty sick.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
I think I just think it's all coming. It's all part of the evolution, and I think I was probably, people think it's a bit hard to do or whatever, but I promise you, any wingers out there who want to learn to downwind, like, and downwind like we do on a SUP or prone, it's way easier to learn to deflate your wing than it is to learn to paddle up. I guarantee you.
Yeah. There's this guy, Paul, that he wants to do like channel crossings and stuff like that. And like one of the risks is that your paddle breaks, right? So he's thinking as a backup, he's going to take a wing and a pump with him so that if his paddle breaks or he can, as long as there's wind, you can wing with it. So
yeah, I think a better backup plan is the hand paddles. Have you guys seen those?
Oh, yeah.
Because they're much smaller, like a wing and a pump gets pretty heavy, and that's gonna limit your ability to paddle up, which is probably going to increase the chances of you breaking your paddle, because the more you're paddling and the more weight you have to paddle. That's the biggest disadvantage of the deflate downwind, is that once you wrap it all up and put it in a backpack, the extra weight of the wing, like, it's probably maybe 5 or 6 kilos.
So the water weight too, if it's still wet, right? Yeah.
It's a lot of water weight. And so I've actually done some of my fastest ever, like, downwind runs when I've had the wing in my backpack, because the extra weight, I can just go faster, but it's way harder to get up.
Oh, that's an interesting point. Actually, I wanted to talk about that as well. And because Dave Klom also says in the downwinders, when he's going fast, he likes a little bit heavier board just for better, more momentum and stability and more. Yeah. And I found that too, actually, that sometimes weight is a good thing. And a lot of people I talk to say, no, weight is never good. You just want the lightest gear possible. You know,
I don't know.
Like, in my experience, that's not really true. But how do you feel about weight in the board, the foil, and so on? Like you said, like, wearing weight on your back actually helps with going faster. Yeah.
Not big time. So the only thing is, so Dave, for example, if it's only 10 knots, Dave being heavier compared to me will have a harder time getting up than I will if we're on the exact same foil. If Dave gets up, so let's change it up. So let's say it's a really windy day and Dave and I are on the same foil, the same setup, exactly the same, but he's heavier. Once we're up on foil, he should be faster just based on, and this is not taking into account how you read a bump or how you do all that and your pumping ability or any of that, but just on the, if you were going in a straight line together, then, and you're next to each other in the exact same bump, Dave should be able to go faster than I can in big conditions. But in smaller conditions on the same foil, if he's slightly under foil and I'm just right, then I'm going to go quicker. So the weight is a big thing. It's a hard thing to plan for, because look, you're not going to, for Molokai to Oahu, the start of the race is generally a lot lighter than it is in the middle. If I'm to weight my board for the start of the race, I'm going to have a harder time to paddle up. But if I can get up with that heavier board, it's going to be better for me in the middle. But the other thing with Molokai to Oahu is you got the upwind at the end. So I think for a race like Molokai to Oahu, where there's lots of different conditions, there's definitely an advantage for the lighter guys, lighter equipment, but not in the middle of the channel, just for the beginning and end. Because for the middle of the channel, a big guy can probably make up a lot of ground on the guys that are smaller, but they've got to be able to get up early and then foil as far as they can, as close they can to the finish. So it's interesting, right? There's a few things going on. I can't wait to get into this foil racing, because I've done a bunch of downwind foil races here in Australia, but mainly against surf skis and outrigger canoes and a few mates who are learning. The best race I've had has been over here in Western Australia against all the WA crew and Marcus and Zane Westwood. But there was heaps of seaweed. So it was like, it was who could foil through the seaweed best. And a bit of it was like a obstacle course. But yeah, I'm looking forward to getting out of Hawaii and getting some some good racing and good conditions for sure. Should be fun.
Yeah, not too much seaweed in Hawaii, but yeah, sometimes I've noticed like just a little tiny thing stuck on your foil makes a big difference in your speed. So
huge. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking the weight too. Like I remember back in the windsurf racing days, like slalom racing and stuff, guys would wear like weighted jackets, like weighted life jackets, so they can hold a bigger sail basically.
Yeah.
So that's another interesting thing. Like, yeah, where you wouldn't think that it doesn't really make sense, but when you're using heavy equipment, sometimes it's like, wow, this is nice. Yeah. Anyway, but
we've seen the tow foil guys do it a bunch too. Lads on a big weighted, heavy
putting
board.
lead weights on their boards and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that just means they can get away with basically going faster with the same foil, because I think especially in the tow foiling stuff, we're just in the tip of the iceberg. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's going to be like, basically, I think tow foils can be a lot smaller than what they are. So you shouldn't have to weight it up. You should just be able to use a smaller foil. But at the moment, the foils have too much lift and we've got to weight our gear up to make them work. So I just think the foil, there aren't enough iterations of it yet.
I think it's similar to having a longer fuselage. It's less pitch sensitive. So if you have a heavier board, it balances out that pitch sensitivity.
True.
Light board will just be harder to control the pitch, and the heavier board just has so much momentum that you don't have to make as many adjustments. It's
sure.
like a more comfortable ride in a way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think there's something to it. I would say lighter is not always better. That's what some people think, but it's not true.
Yeah. I feel like for what most of us are using, like in smaller waves, the lighter stuff is epic because a light setup is going to be really reactive. But when you start to get too much power and too much speed, and that's when you want the heavy stuff. That's when you want to dull everything down. Yeah.
It's like having a nicer suspension or something, like a smoother ride or something like that. I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about equipment, like the foils. What have you learned from riding all these different foils, and now you're developing the cold foils? Like what kind of things are you trying to put together? And what, I guess when you're downwind foiling, you're always trying to create a foil that's easy to pump up on and then fast and easy to control at the maximum speed, or it has a high top end speed. So how do you do that? How do you achieve that compromise?
Yeah, so I guess if we talk about the range, like we've got the planned range for the planned range for code foils is a race wing, which is obviously going to be super as high aspect as we can get it, because we want to be able to go really slow and really fast with the one foil. Like for a race like Molokai, you start in pretty much no bumps. It's like howling offshore, but there's no fetch in the middle. So at the beginning, you need that foil that can paddle up easily. And then in the middle, you want a foil that can go fast because you're out in the middle of the ocean. There's a lot of stuff going on. And then at the end of the race, you've got an upwind pump. So like you need a foil that can pretty much do it all. And that's what we see a race wing is. It's something that it doesn't necessarily, we don't want it to turn really well. Like we'd prefer to add another 2 kilometers on the low end and 2 kilometers on the top end, rather than have it be able to do really nice roundhouse cutbacks. Because for racing, it's not so much about turning. It's more about speed. It's the first across the line. It's not who's the most stylish along the way. And then we have our sort of all-round range, which is that more combination of, yeah, we want to go quick. We want to be able to paddle it up pretty slow too, but we want to be able to turn it too. And so that's what the 850 is. Like it's the one that we're releasing first. It's an all-round wing. We've used it for downwinding and done some pretty quick times. And then we've used it in the surf and it's super fun. So all the clips, that video I shared, that was all on the 850. And I've gone as fast as 2 minute kilometers, like 2 minute flat, and as slow as like 3:15s. The range on that foil is pretty good from what we've tried so far, which is super pleasing.
So going from a race foil to a more carving surfing foil, is it just like the aspect ratio? Is it the wing tips? Like how do you make it turn easier and versus being more efficient or going faster?
Yeah, there's a few things, right? There's the foil section is probably the most important thing. You're probably not going to use the same foil section for a race wing as you are a sort of more all-round wing. And then you've got the outline of the wings, so that's the span and the cord. And so obviously a more all-round foil is going to be lower aspect. It's going to be, instead of being like, it's high. It's as high as you can get it without it still being usable. And then your round wing is something that's still like high-ish aspect, but it's, you don't want to be so high aspect that you can't turn it. So it's just finding that happy medium. It's hard to, and that's what the testing's all about. Yeah, that's what we're playing around now with the, we're really happy with the aspect ratio of the 850. I actually don't have, all I know is the square centimeters. I don't know the span or the chord or anything, but we'll, when we release it, all that stuff will come out. And then obviously the race wing's much, much higher aspect. And then the third range is the sort of the, I guess this, you can use it for downwind, but its main thing is it wants to go slow. Like it's designed to go slow and to turn really well. So basically the stall speed is much lower, which comes at the cost of top speed, but because it turns so well and it can go slow, you're kind of just, it's more of a small wave surf wing and down, learn to downwind wing and learn to wing. Like just, it's not necessarily a learner's wing because I still want to use it. I'm really excited to use it for small bay runs or small surf or light wind wing days. But it's the best foil, if you're getting into it, it's the best foil to learn on. But we don't want to bill it as a learner wing because it's not that. It's going to turn really well. So right. It's a
surfing, that one probably has a little bit of a thicker foil section kind of thing, or the
program. Yeah, we literally were just drawing it up last night, and it's going to be lower aspect again. So basically the race wing's going to be the highest aspect, the all-rounders in the middle, and the surf wing's the lowest aspect. It's probably not going to pump as well as the other ones, but it's going to turn better, and it's going to go slow really well. So that's our vision. We feel like if we do those three foils, it covers everything that you need. And so we've got the benefit of seeing other brands do stuff like that too. And the Unifoil progression and the new Armstrong mid-aspect, that's the sort of area that I guess brands are pushing now. It's like that just surf. It's not just about going fast. It's about going slow and being able to turn.
Yeah. It's interesting how it went like from super boards went super short and then going longer again, super high aspect and then going.
Now they're going short again. It's
just medium aspect again. So we got, but I'm going to share the screen of your, this was the, your record paddle, distance paddle.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So maybe let's talk about that a little bit. And I guess like your wife was there with your baby.
Yeah. Six week old son at this point. It was a journey, and it was something that was organized. And obviously my wife was pregnant at the time we were organizing it. And then we had to put it on ice while the birth and everything happened. And then once everything was, our life was back in order, we're like, okay, let's have a look at what we can organize. And
So the goal was to go as far as you could in one day, basically.
Yeah, so I was actually just looking through the Guinness World Record stuff. So I'm like, I wonder if there's like a foil, like a downwind foil record. And I was looking through it, and lo and behold, I found this, the record was furthest distance on a hydrofoil paddleboard in 12 hours. So basically we're like, okay, let's do it. So there's a bit of admin to get, like you need three witnesses on the boat. You need a boat to get to the start point. You need to line it up with weather. And this was like a 6-month project that kind of came together. This is basically just 6 weeks after my son was born, which was cool to have it all come together. And using the Axis ART 1099, I would have loved to use a smaller foil, but as you can see, the start was pretty light conditions. The wind was actually pretty offshore at the beginning. And there was a little bit of swell, which you can see I'm trying to tap into just here. But at about 3 or 4 hours in, the wind really kicked up. And I wished I was on a smaller foil then. So at the beginning, I wished I was on a bigger foil. And at the end, I wished I was on a smaller foil. And that's like what we're just talking about, the range of a foil. Yeah. You want to be able to. So right now, this is towards the end and I'm fully maxed out. And you can see my stance changes. I get really far forward, get really square. Uh-huh. And yeah, there was a lot of different conditions to negotiate. That's for sure.
So by square, you mean like your toes more pointed forward and more that kind of stance?
Yeah, like more offset. Like my hips are forward, especially toward the last clip of me foiling in at the end was like my, even now, look how, like my hips are fully forward. That's because I'm over foiled, basically. Yeah. I'm just hanging on. And because I've probably been standing for 10 hours, your feet go pins and needles in your feet and some muscles are not working anymore. And yeah. It was tricky.
Yeah. And I can't imagine just standing that long and pumping and oh my God, it must have been pretty exhausting. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're switching your bag.
Yeah. The food changeover. We almost had it. So that's Zane Westwood. He was on the boat as my foiling. He's a good, great foiling mate. And he understands what I'm doing. So to educate everyone else on the boat. And we just missed that little changeover. We hadn't practiced it. We should have practiced it beforehand, but it ended up just when I came down, they'd just throw me, I'd swap packs over.
And it's a pretty big escort boat too.
It's a huge escort boat. Massive. Basically, it was really hard to find an escort boat for this. And I had a mate who does whale watching tours. And because we were filming it, he's like, well, you're going to want a decent boat. He had a smaller boat, but he's like, to have the production team plus support plus the witnesses for Guinness to watch it, we needed a boat that could handle, like, have 8 to 9, even 10 people on board. So, yeah, it was a full production. That's why it was so hard to organize.
Yeah. So I know you have a limited amount of time, so I don't want to keep you too long, but let's talk a little bit about downwind foiling and the technique. Like, can you give some pointers to people that are getting into how to get up on foil? And I've been doing it a bunch. I wouldn't say I'm very good at it. I'm getting better at getting up on foil. And we have a training group where we do like the pop-up training in flat water. And I'm actually able to do it with just a little bit of push from some ground swell, but so getting up for me wasn't too hard on a big foil, but then I guess keeping it going, a lot of times I just felt like the foil wouldn't go fast enough to stay with the bump, so I'd kick out, and then sometimes I would just lose momentum before I can catch the next one. And so just, yeah, maybe some pointers on downwind foiling.
Yeah, I think the first thing is, a lot of people say downwind foiling is the hardest thing you'll ever do, and I'm not going to say it's not, but I think a lot of people are just throwing themselves straight into the deep end, like conditions like we're watching now. Like, I wouldn't want to be learning in conditions like that. There's no way. You want to be learning in, like, back out in my coaching group, like the coach, I've got a club, I guess an online community, the Coach Casey Club, where we talk about this every Tuesday. But like, there's bay runs, which are basically shorter period bumps with just wind bumps. And that happens in harbors, rivers, lakes. Botany Bay in Sydney is one of the awesome places to do it. And basically, the advantage of that is it's easier to balance because you start in pretty much flat water. And the flat water allows you to work on your paddle skills and your balance. Without working your paddle skills and balance, it's really very difficult because you're not going to be able to stand on your board and be able to put power down to get going. So I even say you should go for a paddle on your board just in flat water as like the first thing to do, because if you go out straight into downwind conditions, it's going to be really hard to stand on your board, especially with these new like long skinny boards. Yeah, they make it easier to get up, but being something like 21 or 19 or 18 wide, they're really hard to stand on no matter how long they are. Like, there's a level of balance that is needed to be going into downwind bumps. So just to start out, my biggest tip is get your downwind set up and take it to a piece of flat water, the flattest water you can find, and just work on your paddle stroke, your paddle technique, and work on activating the foil. You don't have to learn to paddle up onto foil, but you have to know how to paddle to a speed that your foil feels like it's doing something under you. And if your foil isn't activated, you're probably not going fast enough to then get it up in bumps. You don't have to learn to paddle up in flat water, in my opinion, to be able to downwind foil. It definitely doesn't hurt, but it's not the be-all and end-all. From there, once I've done a bit of time and I'm confident I can activate the foil and get that sort of pumping motion down, I'll then go into, like I said, like a protected zone. There's my son. He's so little. He's just started walking now. He's a turns one in a couple of days. So I fly home tonight.
Oh,
so
nice.
I don't miss his birthday. But yeah, in terms of the bay runs, you want to get out in bay runs so that basically it's not that choppy. You want all the bumps going one direction. What I've seen a lot of people do is when they're struggling is they go out into an ocean run and they got the swell coming from the east and the wind coming from the south, and there's waves going one direction and wind bumps going the other direction. And that's really hard to learn to foil. And that's even hard for people that know how to foil to do it. But ideally, you want all the wind going one direction, you want it to be shorter period. Shorter period bumps are much easier. Once you can successfully do an entire bay run, so you can foil for 9Ks downwind in a bay, then you can think about going into the ocean. In the ocean, as you can see here, there's lots of different bumps going every different direction. It's not clean. It's wild. And I classify it, you know, you've got your bay runs, which I call like green runs. They are groomers. If you're on the mountain, you start when you learn to ski or snowboard, you're going to start at the training zone. That's pretty much flat. So that's our flat water. Then you go to your green run. And the green runs, they're groomers. It's all nice and clean and easy. And
it's like,
you
know, corduroy bumps, right? Like
corduroy bumps.
Slow moving, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Slow moving. And then once you do that, you then go to your blue runs. and your blue runs is getting a bit steeper terrain, but it's still groomed, and that's an ocean run with no swell. So if you do an ocean run, obviously it's hard to get no waves, but if there's just wind bumps, it's going to make it much easier. So that's our blue runs. And then you go to your black diamond runs, and that's when there's wind and waves going every other direction. And that's just, it's not groomed. It's the opposite. It's wild. It's all over the place. That's the sort of the guide, I guess. And like I mentioned before, with the Coach Casey Club, I go through all that sort of stuff and step people through it. And it's a really cool community because a lot of people are going through the pain together. A lot of people struggle learning to downwind foil, and I can guide them into even have a look at their local spot and say, okay, when the wind's blowing this direction, go check out this spot. Yeah. And if the wind's blowing this direction, and what conditions you should be looking for and all that sort of stuff.
So the Casey Club is at caseyaus.com.
Yeah.
And so talk a little bit about that. If somebody wants to get into downwind foiling, what kind of stuff do you offer on your Coach Casey Club?
Yeah, so I have two parts within my online or like my coaching business, I guess. I've got like in person. So if people are in Sydney or in Australia at some point, they can join me for like a private session. I do one-on-ones, but also do like clinics. I'm actually doing a bunch of camps overseas this year. I'm going to the Maldives with moon tours and going to do more of that in the future. But during COVID, where this business started, it was just like we're doing a few little foil camps up and down the coast, then a few private sessions. And then the other one that I dreamt up during COVID was the online community. And that was obvious why you do that during COVID. We couldn't go anywhere. So I was like, we should have, like, how do I coach people who can't come to me and I can't go to them? So I created this online course, basically, where it goes through the step-by-step guide of how to downwind foil, how to surf foil, how to wing foil, and actually a bunch of stuff on SUP racing, like paddle technique, which has actually helped a lot for the people learning to downwind foil. And that's the Coach Casey Club, that online stuff. And basically up the course, and then I wanted to engage with my clients more. So I introduced a weekly call. So every Tuesday, I call it Talk Back Tuesday. I do a call with all members, like a Zoom call we're doing now, Robert. And we're looking at, instead of looking at just us talking, we bring up videos and everyone loads it up into a Facebook page. And when you go through all the videos, and so I give them feedback on what they're doing. So a lot of people upload GoPro stuff, just selfie stuff. Some people set up a camera on the beach. Some people have mates film them and they do it as a team. So two guys want to learn downwind foil, they'll just film each other while they're out there. And then they can get a lot of feedback from me every week. And then I've got the final sort of piece of the chapter was what I call Friday Wins. And it's just a bit of goal setting. So when people are planning their week, they talk about, okay, what have I achieved this week? What do I want to achieve in the week ahead? And how am I going to get there? That's the package. It's the online course. It's the weekly coaching call, Talk Back Tuesday, and then the Friday Wins, which you go through your goals, go through what you achieved what you've achieved in the last week, and then what you want to do for the week ahead. It's been a really cool, project, really. It's been unreal. And so many people, I feel like I've taught so many people the downwind foil now and opened up this new form of exercise or enjoyment. And it started out as just being like a SUP race sort of thing, but because I was passionate about it and there weren't many other people to do it, I did downwind foil first, and I've introduced surf foil and wing foil since, but downwind foil is definitely the main thing people are coming to me for. A lot of wingers join up to learn how to jibe or learn how to tack or learn how to downwind with the wing. And so that's the other stuff that I've worked on. And I've got a bit of a how to jump stuff, but I'm not pretending I'm a trickster. I'm not the best at jumping, but I can teach the basics of jumping. So yeah, that's the kind of stuff. And even, I guess, for me, when I drew up the course, it was like beginner all the way through to advanced, not super like elite, but like I've got a lot of stuff for people who want to learn to wing. Once you have your equipment, you can jump online, and I've got a step-by-step guide, like how to hold the wing, how to pump up the wing, how to choose your equipment and all that sort of stuff. So it's more than just downwind foiling, but in the coaching calls, the downwind foiling probably takes up the most time because the downwind foil crew are very frothy, like to ask a lot of questions, and which is awesome. Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, super cool. All right. I think you're going to have to go soon, but appreciate your time. It was really cool to chat and catch up. And looks like quite a few of your crew is coming to the Molokai race this summer, right?
Yeah, I just got a text this morning from a mate, and he was like, that is involved with Molokai Tuao. And he's like, there's a few guys signed up from your neck of the woods. Do you think that they're up to it? And it was like names like Zane Westwood, who actually started up as a Coach Casey Club member, and I coached him with that, and now we're just mates, just frothing out, foiling downwind together all the time. Guys like Oscar Hansen, who's the guy who's got the surf pump foil record, and Josh Koo, who's also a Coach Casey Club member. So it's pretty cool that guys I've coached now looking to do Molokai to Oahu. And I'm just in the early stages of writing up a bit of a Molokai to Oahu foil program, so that people who are aspiring to do Molokai to Oahu I can point them in the right direction and give them the best advice on how to train for it and get their nutrition sorted, because it's 52 Ks. It's a long way. It's a big passage of water. It's not as far on a foil as it is on a SUP, as long as you're up on foil. If you're coming down, it's probably going to be longer than a SUP. You've got to be ready. It's going
to
be
a lot of it comes down to having a good strategy and the right nutrition and the right support and logistics and all that kind of stuff.
Oh,
all that stuff can make or break the race, basically.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people talk about Molokai to Oahu, like the race. It's if you made it to the start line, you've done a good job. Like you can now enjoy it, because it's so much admin and training. Yeah. And when you get there, it's like just relax and enjoy. But yeah, thanks so much for having me, Robert. It's been a really coming to show.
Actually, one thing I wanted to ask, like they were talking about the event organizers maybe having a different finish line for the foil racers. So if you could choose where to finish, where would that be? Like, where would you say you would like to have the finish line for foiling? Or do you think it's a good challenge to have to go upwind?
Look, I think it's just they've got to be clear, because obviously if you're designing a foil that needs to go upwind, you want to know about it. Whereas if you're designing a foil that you're going to finish like somewhere at the Outrigger Canoe Club, you'd be using a very different foil for the entire race. And I think, to me, the Outrigger Canoe Club would be an epic place to finish. That's where the boys finish their local runs, right? So that's the obvious spot. But I'm up for anything. The windsock, exactly. But last year, I was actually looking at coming over to the Blue Water Classic and start Rule the Prone and SUP guys started. I was up for the challenge. I think it's downwind foiling is epic, but I think flat water, like foil racing, is something that's going to grow as well. And even like when conditions are only 5 or 10 knots or there's just swell, that's something you can race in. And like foils are now good enough that you can paddle up in next to nothing. Like guys are flat water foiling in a lot of places. And so to be able to think you need to change it just to make it easy for everyone, I think the challenge is half the fun. 52 Ks in the foil now is only about, if it was all downwind, it's only about 2 hours. So by making that upwind stretch makes it, it's not a nice finish, but it's a real finish, and it makes it comparable to all the SUP and prone guys that do it too.
Yeah. But even if they had to finish outside Black Point, that would make it a lot easier too, but to finish. But yeah, I don't know. I guess it makes it more challenging to have to go all the way to the keyhole for sure.
Yeah, I think, probably the most obvious one would be having it there and just having a deep water start out off China Wall. And then people can just limp into the finish line. Maybe have a boat to tow people in or something, because everyone's got an escort boat. So you can just jump on your escort boat and go in from there. But maybe that's the obvious one, because then it's at least everyone's finishing the same spot. I like that. I think the race should finish in the same spot as everyone, as long as we're all competing on the same day. If it's a different day, then we're doing a different race.
All right. Thank you, James. I really appreciate it. And thanks for sharing your stoke and your knowledge. And so, I've been listening. So if you're interested in downwind foiling, definitely check out the KC show and then also the KC Coaching Club. Yeah. Thanks for your time. And maybe we'll talk again after the Molokai race or while we're over there or something like that. Maybe
sounds good. Definitely have to catch up when we're over there. Yeah, it'd be fun to show you the code foils too.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested. I want to try them.
Yeah, cool.
Always cool to try different things. Right on. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, I've been using the Mike's Lab foil, and that thing's so fast. It's pretty amazing.
The benchmark, right? Yeah, I'd love to try that. Yeah,
pretty amazing how fast they are. Like the drag, the controllability at speed is pretty cool.
That's the important thing.
So a lot of progress being made, I think.
Absolutely. It's exciting times. Yeah. Thanks so much, Robert, and speak soon.
Yeah, have a great day. Aloha.
Yeah.
Cheers. See you.
Okay, friends, thank you so much for watching all the way to the end. As I appreciate everyone that watches the whole thing on YouTube, it's only about 5% of the people who click on the video in the beginning watch the whole thing. But I do know that a lot of you also listen to it as a podcast all the way through. And I always appreciate when people tell me I watch the whole thing. So thanks so much. I know it's been a while since my last interview in December. I had Ken Winner and also Mike's Lab, Stefan and Mike from Mike's Lab. So those were great interviews. And I'm always into doing more interviews. So just going to have to keep at it, get people on the show. I tried to get Ken and Johnny Heineken on the show, but I haven't been able to get them to come on yet, so I'm still working on that. If Johnny Heineken, tell him to respond to my email and set up a time to talk. I would really like to talk to him, especially about wingfoil racing, which I'm really into. So yeah, that's it for the show. Hope you enjoyed it. We do have a great sale right now at Blue Planet on foil boards, especially. We got Blue Planet foil boards, all stand up and wing foil boards for $7.99 for the bamboo carbon construction, bamboo with carbon deck construction, and full carbon for $9.99. So that's a great deal. We're basically have a closeout sale of whatever's left in stock so we can make room for new things for the next season. We also have the Armstrong forward geometry boards, both prone and stand-up foil boards and wing foil boards. And then we also have the PPC boards, the PPC SOAR boards, which are also excellent construction, very nice boards for wing foiling. Yeah, so thank you for your support. Basically, this show is made possible by customers of us just like you who support Blue Planet, support our retail operation, which allows me to make these podcasts and videos. So thanks so much for watching. Really appreciate you. Have a great time. See you on the water. Aloha.